I'm going to go ahead and invite our guest speaker for tonight, Sheikh Muzaffar Haider, who hails from the United Kingdom. And the topic which he will be speaking about is advancing the movement of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and social media. Let's go ahead and invite him with a salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والضحى والليل إذا سجى ما ودعك ربك وما قلى وللآخرة خير لك من الأولى ولسوف يعطيك ربك فترضى ألم يجدك يتيما فآوى ووجدك ضالا فهدى ووجدك عائلا فأغنى فأما اليتيم فلا تقهر وأما السائل فلا تنهر وأما بنعمة ربك فحدث صدق الله العلي العظيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد. وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين سيما بقية الله في الأرضين. ربي اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي.
Brothers and sisters, respected elders, fellow Hawza students and comrades, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I'd like to begin first and foremostly by giving my condolences to the Imam of the time, Imam Hujjatul Qa'im al-Mahdi, ajjalallahu ta'ala faraj al-Sharif, and to all of the believers out there. The subject that we're going to be discussing today is advancing the movement of Imam Hussein through social media. And we're going to have this discussion through three pivotal questions. The first question is, how necessary is it for us as Muslims to advance the movement of Imam Hussein through social media? The second question is, what is the difference between comfortable media and challenging media? And the third question is, how does the movement of Imam Hussein require us to raise the sword against the enemies of Islam? So, in the name of Fatima, her magnificent father, her magnanimous husband, and her two sons, the martyrs of all martyrs, I bid you to bless this discussion with a loud and boisterous salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. So first and foremostly, how necessary is it for us as Muslims to advance the movement of Imam Hussein through social media? If we look at the Quran, we'll see that it says, وَمَنْ أَحْسَنُ قَوْلًا مِمَّنْ دُعَى إِلَى اللَّهِ. Allah is raising a divine question here. He's asking us, who is better in speech than one who invites towards Allah? If we look at the ahadith, we'll see that Imam Ridha alayhi salam said, رحم الله عبدا أحيا أمرنا. May Allah have mercy upon that servant who revives our cause. He was asked, O Imam, who is that servant who revives your cause? He said, he is the one who learns our sciences and teaches them to the people. And then he said, فَإِنَّ النَّاسَ لَوْ عَلِمُوا مَحَاسِنَ كَلَامِنَا لَتَّبِعُونَا. He said, if only mankind knew the goodness in our speech, they would certainly follow us. Imam Ridha alayhi salam here is highlighting a fundamental problem that we face. Mankind doesn't know the goodness in the words of the Ahlul Bayt. Whose job is it to deliver the goodness of those words to the masses? The hadith answers that too. It is the job of the abd, the servant. So if we consider ourselves as the servants of the Ahlul Bayt, we must recognize that it is our duty to deliver those speeches of the Ahlul Bayt, those precious words of the Ahlul Bayt to the masses. That's the Quran, that's the hadith. If we go to the wali of our time, the waliul faqih, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, we see that he has been emphasizing for years, if not decades, on the soft war, the ideological battle for the minds of the masses. And he has emphasized on this to such a great extent that he has said, the soft war is more difficult than even the hard war. What is the hard war? The hard war is that when the Muslims, the Mujahideen, they pick up their weapons, they go into the battlefield, and they are ready to take bullets. They are ready to suffer thirst and hunger on the battlefields. Imam Khamenei is saying that the soft war is even more difficult than that. Why? He says, because in the hard war, bodies get trampled into the dirt. They get bloodied and wounded, but souls ascend to the heavens. In the soft war, the opposite is true. In the soft war, bodies become fat, comfortable, and complacent, but souls descend to the pits of hell. Many of the signs of the Dhuhr have already come true. And we're more than familiar with those signs. But out of all the signs that exist, there are only 5 signs, maximum 6 signs, which have to come true. And these are the key major signs which must occur before the Dhuhr of Imam al-Hujjatul Qa'im. And one of them is the voice from the sky. Our ahadith tell us that a voice shall come from the sky and it will inform everybody across the planet in their own language that the dhuhur has happened, the qiyam of Imam Mahdi has begun. And this will prepare the masses for that great revolution of Imam Mahdi. But the ahadith also tell us that a second voice will also be heard. And this second voice will confuse people. It will make them hesitate. According to a number of our ulama, this voice from the sky actually refers to the media of Akhiruz Zaman. Why? Because the satellites from which we gain our information are in the sky. And everybody across the world will hear that announcement in their own language. Now you imagine it. Dear brothers, dear sisters, just imagine for a moment. A television broadcaster announces that the dhuhur has happened. The qiyam has begun. Over in a few moments even, we'll see that immediately hashtags are created, trends are created, globally everybody is talking in their own languages, algorithms break due to the sheer mass and volume of the masses across the world speaking, and they're only talking about one thing, and that one thing is the dhuhr of our Mahdi. But we know precisely how the media works. If we assume that that first call happens at Fajr time, for example, by Dhuhr time, the second voice will come and it will confuse the masses. They will block and they will censor the voices of truth out there. And you will see that new voices emerge and they will convince the masses that this is not the Mahdi. This is a Dajjal. This is an imposter. This is somebody who is causing fitna. And all those people who at Fajr time were prepared to leave their houses with their weapons, who were booking their tickets to leave, now they are hesitating, now they are confused. We have to take a trip back in history and really recognize the power of the propaganda spread by Muawiyah back in the time of Imam Ali alayhi salam, because we often underestimate the power of that propaganda. It was so great that it caused the masses in the Muslim lands to turn against the Imam of their time. It turned the masses in the Muslim lands, caused the scholars in the Muslim lands to go up onto the pulpits and curse Ali ibn Abi Talib. We often underestimate how truly conniving that propaganda of Muawiyah must have been. And it is precisely the repercussions of that propaganda which affected Imam Hassan alayhi salam in his time. And so we see that Imam Hassan alayhi salam had very few supporters. His support was very weak, and he was forced to sign a peace treaty with the very same man who cursed his father. Then we go forward to the imamate of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and again we see Imam Hussein had very few companions. We should not fool ourselves into thinking that such propaganda only affects the enemies. No, it affects the mu'mineen, it affects the Shia. A good example of this is the group known as the Tawabin. Who were the Tawabin? They were a group predominantly situated in Kufa. They were a group of Shia. They were willing to fight and die for the sake of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. How many of them were there? Around 4,000. Can you imagine how history would have been changed had they shown up on the battlefield with Imam Hussein on that day? Tawabin. What was the failure of the Tawabin? They loved the Imam of the time. That wasn't their failure. They were willing to draw the sword for the Imam of the time. That was not their failure. What was their failure? Their failure was in failing to follow the representative of Imam Hussein, i.e. Muslim ibn Aqil. Now you fast forward to our time. There are many Shia in the world. They love Imam Mahdi. They are willing to sacrifice for Imam Mahdi. They say they will do everything for Imam Mahdi. Their wealth, their home, they will abandon everything. They're willing to fight and die for the sake of Imam Mahdi. Where is the failure? It's in precisely this. They're failing to follow the representative of Imam Mahdi, who in today's age is none other than the Waliul Faqih, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei. The Holy Quran says, وَلَن تَجِدَ لِسُنَّةِ اللَّهِ تَبْدِيلًا. You will not find in the sunnah, in the pattern of Allah, any change. If we see that the people of the past followed a certain path and it led them to failure, if we follow that same path, it is also going to lead us to failure. No, we need to not repeat the past mistakes of those who came before us. And we need to recognize that in today's age, we are faced by a Muawiyah media machine, the triple M, the big MM. And this machine has become all the more sophisticated, and it is hell-bent on causing our youths to go astray. It is hell-bent on causing our young men to turn to their lustful desires, snatching away the hijabs of our young daughters. It is hell-bent on causing our women to remove their chadars to go out in public with makeup. It is hell-bent on dragging families through the dirt towards materialism. It is the cause for the fitna between man and wife, which is leading to the skyrocketing divorce rates. And ultimately, it wishes to turn us against Islam and against the Imam of the time. Therefore, it stands to reason that we, as Muslims, must consider it necessary for all of us to stand against this machine. Every single person in the world needs to learn, needs to know about the movement of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein. And in today's world, the movement of Imam Hussein manifests through the Islamic Revolution. And this is something we're going to elaborate on as we go forward. But now we're going to go to the second question, which is, what is the difference between comfortable media and challenging media? Try to keep this in your heads. Comfortable media is basically that media which puts you in your comfort zone. You can switch off your brain and you can sit back, relax, and enjoy. It doesn't challenge you in any way. Some examples of comfortable media would be, for example, cooking videos. For example, memes. For example, prank videos. You can watch these for hours and hours and hours, and it's lots of fun. But at the end of the day, you walk away and you haven't changed one bit. You've just wasted a little bit of time. This is comfortable media. On the other hand, we have challenging media. Challenging media does the opposite. It forces the viewer to engage critically. And what challenging media is essentially doing is actively trying to change your opinions and ideologies. Examples of challenging media would be the news, or debates, talk shows, anything that when you watch it, it forces you to switch on your brain. So this is the difference between comfortable media and challenging media. Now we bring this to the Shia Muslim world. How are we producing both comfortable and challenging media? Think about every time you've gone to a majlis, and the majlis has been brilliant. It's been a brilliant lecture. It's been a spiritual lecture. It's been an ethical lecture. You may have even learnt something new. But it did not change your perspective. It did not activate you and make you want to make a change in society. It's comfortable media. When you go to a majlis as Shia Muslims, and the Mawlana is speaking, for instance, about the wilaya of Amir al-Mu'mineen, you already follow Imam Ali alayhi salam. It's put you in your comfort zone. We call these wahwa majlises. You know, the Mawlana will be speaking, he'll be telling you historical details, everybody will be going wahwa, wahwa, wahwa. In Farsi, they'll be saying bah, 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 bah. In Arabic, it will be asantum, asantum, ya sheikh. In English, it would be bravo, bravo, encore. It's all good, but it's comfortable. It hasn't changed you in any way. Another example of comfortable media when it comes directly to the cause and mission of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein is Nohas and Latmiyas. Nohas and Latmiyas, this poetry which is created, we have to bear in mind, it's all good, we're not saying this is a bad thing, but we also have to recognize that this is a form of comfortable media. It is created for Shias who already love Imam Hussein and already want to cry for Imam Hussein. This is as opposed to challenging media in the Shia Muslim world. Challenging media in the Shia Muslim world would be, for example, how do we address the LGBT disease in the community? How do we prove wilayatul faqih for the youths out there? How do we refute the claims of the taghut and our opponents? These are forms of challenging media. And what challenging media does is it changes people's opinions. It changes the society. When it comes to Imam Hussein, there will always be these two approaches, and we need to be very much aware of this. There is the comfortable approach and the challenging approach. What is the comfortable approach to presenting Imam Hussein? You go to India, an Indian population who already respects and reveres somebody like Gandhi. You say, you love Gandhi? Here's Hussein. He's just like Gandhi. And the population will accept it. You go to America, where a personality like Martin Luther King is already revered, and you say, you like Martin Luther King? Here's Hussein. He's just like Martin Luther King, another civil rights activist. You go to Africa, you say, you like Nelson Mandela? Here's Hussein. He is just like Nelson Mandela, another hero to add onto your list. It's comfortable media, and in this case, it's actually whitewashing the message of Imam Hussein in a very dangerous way, potentially. Challenging media would not present Imam Hussein like that. Challenging media would present Imam Hussein as the beacon for resistance against oppression wherever it is. Many people, when it comes to the soft war, they think it's all about WhatsApp groups. They spend a lot of time on WhatsApp groups. They type a lot on WhatsApp groups and Telegram groups and other social media platforms. They'll be sharing an inspirational quote, and it will get lots and lots of likes, and the person will pat themselves on the back and say, I've done a good job. No, brother, sister, you haven't done a good job. This was comfortable media. It was bound to be popular. It was bound to get lots of likes. You have not moved the society in any way. You've just posted something which was bound to be popular. I want to give you an example here, and the example is from Ray William Johnson. Ray William Johnson is one of the most, if not the most, popular video content creators in the world. And on the YouTube platform, and I stumbled across a video from him, and basically, I'm paraphrasing here, but what he says is, look, I'm more popular than most of these mainstream news organizations. I get more views than all of them. I get more views than the likes of Joe Rogan. And then he says, it means absolutely nothing. This popularity is just a game of algorithms. And I believe that Ray William Johnson was actually saying this sincerely. He wasn't saying it to show some sort of humility. No, he was recognizing that it means nothing. Think about Instagram influencers. Some of these influencers on social media, they have hundreds of millions of followers. Hundreds of millions. That's like an entire country following you online. They post one picture of a sandwich within a minute. It's got 200,000 likes and comments. One such Instagram influencer thought to herself, I'm so popular. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to organize a meet and greet. Now I'm going to get lots of people. I'm going to invite them. They can come. I'll sign things for them. I'll give them my signature. I can give them a motivational lecture maybe. Maybe they can ask me questions. I'll answer them. Can you guess how many people showed up to her meet and greet? Zero. Zero. Absolutely none. This video is online, available. You can see she's standing there alone with a stall in front of her, looking rather silly. Why? Because while we have seemingly popular video content creators and influencers out there, the content that they're creating is comfortable media. It easily garners all those likes and comments and shares, but it doesn't move the society. Nobody's going to actually get up out of their seat to come and meet you or to make a change in society. And so, we must recognize this. When it comes to advancing the movement of Imam Hussein, there are these two approaches. The comfortable approach says, we're going to get people to cry for Imam Hussein. That's it.
That's it. That's what we're going to do. But even the enemies cried for Imam Hussein. The challenge, dear brothers and sisters, is not only to get people to cry for Imam Hussein, but to get people to bleed for Imam Hussein. To get people to sweat for Imam Hussein. To get people to toil and to work for the cause of Imam Hussein. This is the challenge. And it's not going to be easy. It was never supposed to be easy. Go to the Quran. What does it say? كَبُرَ عَلَى الْمُشْرِكِينَ مَا تَدْعُوهُمْ إِلَيْهِ It says, it is very difficult upon the mushrikeen, that which you call them towards. The reality of Islam is difficult because it calls people towards action, doing something for the cause. And I would like to reiterate, both comfortable media and challenging media are necessary. They're good. We need them both. Comfortable media retains the audience. It keeps them. Challenging media activates the audience. So now we come to the third and final question, which is, how does the movement of Imam Hussein require us to raise the sword against the enemies of Islam? And I'd like to start this with a hadith that we mentioned a few days ago from the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. This hadith, you can find it in our most authentic books. You can find it in Al-Kafi. The Holy Prophet says, Al-khayru kulluhu fi al-sayf wa tahta dhill al-sayf wa la yaqumu an-nas illa al-sayf. He says, goodness, all of goodness is in the sword and under the shade of the sword, and nothing makes mankind rise except the sword. You talk to youths and others who have been influenced by Western media. You ask them, when you watch a Hollywood movie and you see the hero charging into battle with his sword drawn, you admire it. You love it. A part of you wants to be like that. When you watch Hollywood movies about the samurai culture and you see that the sword was something sacred to them, you admire it. You want to have a sword too. But when it comes to Islam, suddenly it's like, no, we have to hide this hadith away. We can't let this get out. Islam is a religion of peace. No, Islam is not a religion of peace. Neither is it a religion of war. Islam is calling us to invite the entire world to monotheism, to the worship of one God and to the rulership of one Imam. And if anyone tries to stop us in that noble mission and goal, and if anybody tries to fight us and attack us, we will draw the sword and we will send them to the graveyard. It's as simple as that. Raising this sword is a job for everyone. Why? Because we're not now talking about the physical sword. No, we're talking about the ideological sword. We're talking about the sword of the soft war. And this is a job for everyone, for every man and woman, for every sister and brother, for the young and the old, for the scholars and the non-scholars. Every Muslim must draw this ideological sword and fight and confront the enemies of Islam. This is what we are saying. But people come forward with all sorts of excuses. They say, for example, I don't have enough knowledge. They say, for example, I don't have the necessary skills. They say, for example, who is going to listen to me? And this attitude is killing us. It's absolutely killing us, dear brothers and sisters. And I'll explain why in a moment. But I want you to think about this. Before we explain, I want you to think about this. Think about BBC News. How many BBC News personalities do you know? Think about it. You know maybe a couple of correspondents, maybe two or three anchors. Maybe you're assuming the boom mic operator is there, the lighting and camera guy is there. Maybe there's somebody who writes the script. How many do you think work at BBC News? Around 3,500. Of those, how many do you actually see? Disney, the huge enemy, Disney. How many Disney personalities do you know? How many voice actors do you actually know of from Disney? Think about it. Try and write it down. Maybe you know 100. Do you know how many people work at Disney? Over 200,000 employees. Forget that. The US film industry, Hollywood. How many actors do you know? Think about it. If you're very film savvy, maybe you'll know 100, 200 tops. How many directors, producers do you know? Do you know how many people work in the US film industry? 2.2 million people work. To put that into perspective for you, that's more than the population of Bahrain. And this is just one institution, one organization that we are faced with. Do you see the parallels, dear brothers and sisters? Do you not see the huge numbers of the enemies that we are faced up against? Do you not see the parallel between this and Karbala? When we see that Imam Hussein alayhi salam in that hard war was vastly outnumbered, do we not see that in today's age, the Imam of the time is vastly outnumbered when it comes to the soft war? What is the attitude, however, that we're supposed to have when we see that there are so many armies against us? What is the attitude we're supposed to have? The Holy Quran says, وَلَمَّا رَأَى الْمُؤْمِنُونَ الْأَحْزَابَ قَالُوا هَذَا مَا وَعَدَنَا اللَّهُ وَرَسُولُهُ وَصَدَقَ اللَّهُ وَرَسُولُهُ وَمَا زَادَهُمْ إِلَّا إِيمَانًا وَتَسْلِيمًا. It says, when the believers saw the Ahzab, they saw these huge armies against them. They said, this is what the Prophet and Allah promised us. And this is what they said. And what they said was the truth. And it increased them in nothing except Iman and Taslim, faith and submission. This is the attitude we're supposed to have. But we should not, dear brothers and sisters, fall for the trap of thinking that soft war is only about being in front of the camera. It is only about being visible. There is so much work that goes on behind the scenes. It's incredible. But what's happening right now in the Shia Muslim world, when it comes to advancing the movement of Aba Abdullah al-Hussein and the movement of the Islamic Revolution, is all of that workload is falling on a few sincere individuals, and they're having to compensate for the lack of help that they have. And this is something that we witness across the board. I tell you, dear brothers and sisters, in the world we have 200 million Shias waiting, just waiting to be activated. And the question is, what are we waiting for? Do we not hear the words of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, where he is saying, do you not see that batil is being acted upon, that haqq is being abandoned, that bid'ah is being rampant in society, that the Quran and the sunnah of the Prophet is being abandoned? Are these all not things that we see in today's society? Then what are we waiting for? Is it not true that the Imam of the time is waiting for us? In the time of Musa, Musa alayhi salam tells Bani Israel, go and fight the enemy. Bani Israel turns to Musa and they say, فَذْهَبْ أَنْتَ وَرَبُّكَ فَقَاتِلَا إِنَّهَا هُنَا قَاعِدُونَ. They said, oh Musa, you go with your Lord and fight them. We're going to be sitting right here comfortably. That's the time of Musa. You go to the time of Imam Hussein. The Tawabin, what did they say? We will not do Qiyam until the Imam comes. Then we will do Qiyam. That's the time of Imam Hussein. And in our time, what are we saying? We're saying, The world is a mess. A dirty, rotten, political, social mess. Imam Mahdi will come and clean up this mess.
مگه امام زمان نوکر ماست؟
Is Imam Mahdi our servant that he should come up and clean up this mess? Do we not recite every morning in Dua Ahad?
ظهر الفساد في البر والبحر بما كسبت أيدي الناس.
This holy verse of the Quran where Allah is saying corruption has appeared on land and sea because of what the hands of men have wrought. Do we not realize that if corruption has been spread by the hands of Nas, the hands of men, then it must also be undone by the hands of Nas, by the hands of men? Meaning we have the power to change it, and therefore we must raise the ideological sword, and it will take sacrifices from us. We must confront the enemy in the battlefield of the soft war. We are being ideologically slaughtered out there. And I pray to Allah that I don't make people hopeless. That is not my intention. I'm not trying to make people hopeless. But that is the reality. When Imam Khamenei talks about the soft war, when Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah talk about the soft war, it's very clear that on the military front, we're covered. When Sayyidah Zainab Shrine was attacked, we had rows and rows and rows of valiant young youths who were volunteering to go and defend the shrine. They weren't even commanded. Imam Khamenei didn't even have to tell them. The hard war is covered. We can fight the enemy on that battlefield. It is the soft war where we are taking a thrashing. Look at even our opponents today in the so-called Shia community who are spreading fitna. We need to stop looking at others and thinking this person can solve it. No, if you see a problem in society, you need to stand for that problem because we are truly being ideologically slaughtered. There are youths out there who are turning towards LGBT, who are becoming suicidal. Divorce rates are skyrocketing. It's a mess. We are the ones who need to clean up this mess. Every youth that goes astray is like a arrow in the heart of Imam Zaman. Now picture this. Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his companions are standing in Karbala. They are establishing the salat. Around him are those noble companions who volunteered to protect them from the arrows that were being fired at them. They're standing around and they are guarding it. They were not only defending the Imam of the time, but they were also defending the Institute of Salat. If you ask any of the scholars, they will tell you, a Salat is the most important wajib that we have. Ask anybody who knows a thing about Islam. They'll tell you that our number one duty is to pray salah. If your salah is accepted, all of your a'mal will be accepted. If your salah is rejected, all of your a'mal will be rejected. So then we have Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi coming and saying that the defense of the Islamic Republic of Iran, of the Nizam, the Islamic system that we have today, the defense of it is even more important than Salat. How? Why? Let me ask you a question. Do you think that Salat would survive if it were not for the Islamic Republic of Iran? Meaning, if the Islamic Republic of Iran, God forbid, tomorrow it disappeared off the face of the planet, do you really think people would be praying salah in the world? Give it one generation, give it two generations, give it three generations, with the Muawiyah media machine constantly filling the minds of our youths, our elderly, our sisters, our brothers, with a barrage of propaganda, of materialism, of dunyawiism. Do you really think that the salat would survive? Do you think people would be doing hajj? You think hajj would survive? Do you think sisters would be observing hijab in the world if it were not for the existence of the Islamic Republic of Iran? Really? Even our Sunni brethren are recognizing that when you look at the socio-political stage and you try to see some sort of Islamic leadership, there's nothing left. The Saudis have revealed themselves to be the dirty secularist types that they are, promoting nightclubs and alcohol, even in that which they refer to as Saudi Arabia. Sunni brethren have recognized that that's not something we can look to for leadership. The only one that you can look to for leadership, the only leader in the Islamic world who you can count on to protect the sha'air Allah, the symbols of Allah, to protect the physical symbols as well as the rites, rituals of Islam, is the Waliul Faqih Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei. And so we have a quote from Shaheed Qasim in his last will and testament. He says, Imruz qarargah Hussein ibn Ali Iran ast. Today, the markaz, the center point, the pivot, the castle, the fortress of Imam Hussein and the movement of Imam Hussein is Iran. Therefore, dear brothers and sisters, respected elders, fellow Hawza students and comrades, we need to be willing to take arrows for this nation. We need to be willing to sacrifice our wealth for this system. We need to be willing to sacrifice our reputation and everything that we have to protect the Islamic Republic and the Islamic Revolution which manifests today in Iran. If we work on these three things, if we truly recognize the necessity of pushing and advancing the movement of Imam Hussein through social media, and if we recognize the differentiation between comfortable media and challenging media, and if we are willing to draw the ideological sword for the sake of Islam today, then we will see miracles. We will see people changing sides. We will see people, as the Quran says, afwaja, in huge groups, coming towards the Islamic Revolution. Throughout history, we have seen many times where somebody leaves the camp of the smaller numbers and goes and joins the camp which has greater numbers. But where throughout history do we see that somebody leaves the camp which has greater numbers and comes and joins the camp which has smaller numbers? Like Hur. I'd like to urge you, dear mourners of Aba Abdullah al-Hussein, to not hold back your tears. Muharram has begun. We don't know if this 10th of Muharram is the day when the Dhuhr takes place. Let us pray now that these tears of ours wash away the crimes of our past life, inshallah. Hur is leading his army into Karbala. He comes and he sees the camp of Hussein, and he sees how few have come to help the Imam of the time. He sees the camp of the women and children, and a rider upon a white horse coming towards the camp of oppressors. He sees how lonely this man is, and he witnesses the nur upon his face, and he sees the courage with which he speaks as Hussein begins to deliver a sermon to the camp of oppressors. Hussein says, "Now you have sided with your own enemies against your friends. Such enemies have disseminated no equity among you, nor do you hope for their reform. So be forewarned of calamities. While he spoke, perhaps Hur thought to himself, how can I side with the enemies of this man? Hussein continues his sermon. He says, you abandoned us, keeping your swords resting in their scabbards, enjoying your comfort and ease, thinking you were acting wisely. But you opted to fall greedily upon life like the swiftest of birds, throwing yourselves on it as butterflies fall on the fire. These words struck the heart of horror. He thought to himself, how could I have abandoned this man? What honor do I have? I was supposed to be a soldier, brave, courageous, and loyal. I was supposed to live up to my name and become free. But I have become a slave to the dunya. Immediately, he thinks of his parents and thinks how proud they will be. He thinks of his wife and kids and how pleased they will be. I will be richer and I will be promoted if I fight Hussein. Then in the future I can do good for the cause. He tries to convince himself, even if I oppose Hussein, maybe Hussein will give up and be spared, and Allah will forgive me thereafter. But then Hussein recited those famous words, Ala wa inna ad-da'i ibn ad-da'i qad rakazani bayna ithnatayn bayna as-sillati wa adh-dhillati wa hayhat min adh-dhillah. Surely the illegitimate son of the illegitimate father has placed me between these two, between death and humiliation, and I will never accept humiliation. Hur realizes that Hussein is going to fight until his last breath, but Hur is still confused. He goes back to Umar ibn Sa'd inside the camp. He says, are you really going to kill this man? Are you really going to kill this man? I want you all to imagine this in your heart of hearts. Hur goes inside his camp, inside the camp of oppressors. He can hear noises, raised laughter. He can hear the boots of the soldiers on the ground, the chinking of the chainmail. And as he is passing by, they are all saluting him. They are giving him the utmost respect. And everything that he sees adds to his inner turmoil. He sees a blacksmith sharpening a sword. Oh, Hur, this is the sword that will cut deep into a young boy who tries to defend Hussein. He turns around and he sees another man preparing arrows. Oh, Hur, these are the arrows that will be fired at Hussein and his company while they attempt to pray Salat. He turns away and he sees the river Euphrates behind the camp. And he sees it. Oh, Hur, this is the river that has been blocked from quenching the thirst of the camp of Hussein. This is the river that Abbas will rush towards and fill his water carrier. Oh, Hur, Abbas will not return with the water to his brother Hussein. Oh, Hur, this is where his hands will be chopped off. Oh, Hur, this is the river that Hussein, in his last moments when he is alone, will dash towards while his throat is dry and his thirst is unbearable. Yet the enemies will mock him. Do you see the surface of the water shimmer and shine in the blazing sun? Hur cannot take this. He turns away and he sees another horrible man. Oh, Hur, this is the one who will rip the earrings from the ears of young little girl, Sakina, the beloved daughter of Hussein. He turns another way and his eyes fall upon Hurmala. Oh, Hur, this is the man who will fire an arrow into the throat of the suckling baby boy of Imam Hussein. He turns another way and he sees a group of hardened criminals. Oh, Hur, these are the ones who will surround Ali ibn al-Akbar. These are the ones who will attack the one who resembles the Prophet most. And they will attack him, slash him with their swords, and stab him with spears from all sides. Oh, Hur, these are the ones who will not show mercy, even to the women of the household. They will set fire to their tents. They will rob and loot their belongings and snatch away their chadors. He turns away immediately and he bumps into Shimmer. Oh, Hur, this is the man who will sit on the chest of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein. Oh, Hur, do you see that dagger in his belt? This is the dagger with which he will slaughter Hussein like a sacrificial lamb while he is thirsty. He turns another way. He sees a man with a leather bag. Oh, Hur, this is the leather bag in which the shirt of Hussein will be placed once it has been snatched from his bloodied body. Oh, Hur, do you see that man with no ring on his finger? Soon he will be wearing the sacred ring of Abu Abdullah, for he will have hacked the blessed fingers of Hussein. Oh, Hur, do you see this man? He is the one. Oh, when Imam Hussein calls for help and he cries out, Helmi Nasirin Yansurini, this is the man who will laugh and spit and throw a spear at Hussein. He turns another way. He sees a man tending to the hooves of the horses. He sees them in the stable. Oh, Hur, these are the horses that will trample the blessed body of Hussein. He sees another man. He sees that he is holding a spear. Oh, Hur, this is the spear upon which the blessed head of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein will be placed. Hur is trembling, he is shaking. One of his men approaches him, Al-Mujahir, he said, Oh Hur, had I been asked who is the bravest of the Kufans, I would have said you, but here you are shaking and trembling. Hur says, how can I not be shaking when I am choosing between paradise and hell? And then he gazed at the small camp of Hussein. He sees it shining with heavenly light. It was at this moment that he gave up on everything. He let go of his wealth. He let go of his reputation. He abandoned his prestige and his safety and comfort. And he cried out, I do not prefer anything, I do not prefer anything over paradise, even if I burn alive. He begins to gallop fast in the direction of the camp of Hussein. He is going so swiftly the heavenly winds catch him. He feels free for a moment, but as he approaches, he slows down. He slows down, for he sees the sons of Fatima. He sees Abbas, his face shining like the moon. He witnesses a man who he thinks is the Holy Prophet. And then he realizes this is Ali ibn al-Akbar, and he sees the daughters of Ali, and he is filled with remorse and agony. He turned his spear upside down. He placed his shield on the ground. He came lowering his head, too ashamed to face them. Some reports say he stayed on his horse a few yards away. In this state of humility, he looks up and cries out, Oh Allah, to you do I surrender, so do accept my repentance, for I have filled the hearts of your walis and sons of your prophet with pain. O Abu Abdullah, can I be forgiven at all? Look at the mercy of Allah manifested through Hussein. He says, yes, O Hur, Allah will accept your repentance. Now think about our sins. Think about the ghibah we have done, the lies we have told, the prayers we have made late. Think about the believers we have insulted, the disrespect that we have shown to our parents. Think about the oppressed people that we have not stood for. Forget about Think about the deen that we have neglected. Think about the sins that our eyes have committed, that our ears have committed. And now recognize that if Hur could have been forgiven, why can we not be forgiven this day? Hur takes permission from Aba Abdullah al-Hussein. He charges valiantly into the battlefield against those who he was just leading. He fights like a lion, they throw him off his horse. When he is fallen, he is brought back to Aba Abdullah al-Hussein. Hussein says to him, O Hur, you are free as your mother named you. في الدنيا والآخرة وسيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون.